You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G. D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team.
Hello and good morning, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This is a daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I'm Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends, and with me, as always, except when I'm not here, he's by himself, is Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm good. Glad to have you back, Vince.
Yeah. I didn't want to skip out after a loss yesterday, but it was things out of my control.
Sure.
Yeah. So today, we have a fun episode planned for you guys today, off-day episode. So, you know, we get to get a little bit creative. We're going to do a, you know, good cop, bad cop type of segment with a few contentious points with the Dodgers. And then second half, we're going to have our obscure Dodgers, some key dates in history that will lead to more discussions. But first, a reminder to subscribe to the show Locked On Dodgers on the Himalaya Podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcasts Locked On Dodgers. Also, today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. We've both praised it. Jeff uses it. I've used it. It's, you know, you get the best prices and you get rewarded. And you get free nights. So, you know, it's the best of all worlds. So let's get into the show. Like I said, we're going to start with a bad cop, good cop type segment. We are going to go through three topics, and we're each going to take a side and argue that side. And we are going to start with, let's start with Clayton Kershaw. And basically, you know, the overall surrounding argument around Kershaw. Is he still an ace? Is he still, you know, a top whatever pitcher? And is he still the Dodgers guy? So, Jeff, I know you love Clayton Kershaw, and he's probably your favorite Dodger, but we're going to put you on the bad side today. So make an argument against Clayton Kershaw.
My favorite Dodger and my favorite person. You know, and maybe it comes down to the silly definition of what an ace is, but, I mean, basically right now Kershaw is the Dodgers' number three or four starter. And that, you know, I don't know how much I have it in me to be too critical of Kershaw, because he still is very good, but he's not anywhere close to what he used to be, and which is kind of stating the obvious. But he's also partly because Ryu has stepped up so big. You know, we've seen great performances from Hill, and you know, hopefully we'll see another one from Maeda this weekend. We've seen two in a row from him. You know, obviously Walker Buehler has the stuff and the potential to be the ace. And really, you know, it's not much of an insult to say you're the number three or four starter on this team. But the fact is Kershaw is not an ace. If by ace you mean a guy who has potential to win the Cy Young Award. Because Kershaw, I will be surprised if he gets any Cy Young votes in the rest of his career. Maybe some down ballot votes, but you know, I don't think he's the guy who's going to have a 2.1 ERA, you know, every year. He's more of a guy who you're going to hope for high twos or low threes. So, you know, basically Madison Bumgarner when Bumgarner was good. So still not an insult, but he's down to being a good mortal pitcher.
Yeah. Although I will argue that I think he is finally starting to realize, you know, what he has to be. And he did so a little bit last year, but I think this year he's figuring out a little bit more. The one bad part is that his home run percentage is up. His home runs per nine and his, you know, home runs five balls percentage is up, but his ground ball percentage is up. About 8% from last year. His ERA is up there a little bit, but that comes with the home runs. He hasn't had any truly bad starts this season. If you want to use wins, he is 4-0. The Dodgers have have done a good job of supporting him this year. And, you know, I think as he goes on and he continues to learn, I think he might develop that sneaky ace. He's going to get back into that ace category, but from a different way. But it's going to come with some, it's going to come with him learning and, you know, maybe developing that changeup. But I still think right now, if you give me a game seven, as of right now, I'm still going to go with Kershaw.
Yeah, I was going to say that the key will be, can he ever develop that changeup? He worked on it for a long time when he didn't need it. Now that he doesn't really have a fastball, he could really use that changeup.
Yeah. All right. That was a little soft, but I mean, Kershaw, there's not too much to knock on him.
Making me bad cop on Kershaw, you know, I did my best.
Yeah.
This is Debate Club, and I am a solid C student.
All right, moving on, we're going to move on. Well, we'll save the most contentious point for the end. This point, you will get to argue maybe your favorite offensive Dodger right now and for him, and it's Alex Verdugo, and the topic is batting higher in the lineup. So make the case for Alex Verdugo batting. Let's go top four in the lineup.
Okay, I am on record as saying that lineup construction doesn't concern me too much, and that's still true, but the bottom line is your best hitters should be getting the most at bats, and you know, the your overall best hitter, current, you know, best wisdom says your best hitter should be hitting second, because you don't, you know, if they have power, whatever, you want to get them chances with guys on base, plus whatever. So Alex Verdugo, he should be batting leadoff. He should be batting leadoff every game. And it should have happened a few weeks ago. I was fine with them starting him low in the order to get his feet wet as a big leaguer. But basically, as soon as he made it apparent that he is a big league hitter, he should have been bumped up to the leadoff spot every game. Because right now, on base percentage, he's fourth on the team. The three guys ahead of him are Bellinger, Turner, and Muncy. And all three of those guys have more power than Verdugo does. So Verdugo is a guy, he's got gap power. He's not going to hit a ton of home runs. He's going to get on base with the walks. He's going to, you know, as a leadoff hitter, he'd get better pitches to hit just because, you know, in general, pitchers come out trying to throw strikes to start the game. You know, you hardly ever see a leadoff walk in it starting the first inning. And so Verdugo is the kind of guy who, by getting more pitches to hit, will get more hits, and he'll still take his walks. He doesn't strike out much. Overall, Alex Verdugo should be batting leadoff for the Dodgers every single day, setting the table for Turner and Bellinger and Muncy, you know, and once Corey Seager starts hitting consistently, him too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go on the flip side of it and say the Dave Roberts and the Dodgers aren't ones to overreact. I'm not saying Alex Verdugo is not going to keep up this production, but you know, the Dodgers aren't one to give a hot streak and kind of move that in the order. It took about 35 games for Corey Seager to move down the lineup after he was struggling a little bit. He's starting to pick up, but you know, it's, to me, it's kind of similar, and not based on anything other than you never know. Is that it's similar to Yasiel Puig? When Yasiel Puig was moved higher in the lineup, he seemed to not fare as well as when he was kind of lower in the lineup with a little bit less pressure. Now, Alex Verdugo's different type of hitter than Yasiel Puig. I understand that. But he is a young guy, and he hasn't been through, you know, what has he played, like 60 career games. So he hasn't really been through those complete struggles yet. And when that hits, if it hits, you know, you don't want the reaction of him having batting high in the lineup and then you kind of have to have a quick reaction to get him out of the top of the lineup. So I'm more of the let's wait and see a little bit longer. And if he keeps up this production, I know he's a contact hitter, which is good for top lineup, but I feel like he's thriving where he's at right now. And the Dodgers are working well as a team, so you can kind of keep him where he's at for now.
Yeah, I didn't know it was understatement episode. Alex Verdugo is not the same type of hitter as Yasiel Puig. There we go. There's our understatement of the day.
Well, you know, he has the 60 career games. Yeah. Puig was way better hitter at this point through 60 career games, I would imagine. if we went back and looked at the numbers. So.
Yeah, I bet he still didn't have quite the plate discipline or contact skills that Verdugo does.
Yeah. All right, next one. I'll start off as bad cop, and this is probably the most contentious point of the team and has been basically this whole string of NOS title runs, is the bullpen and how bad the bullpen is. So I'll start off as it sits right now. The Dodgers have a bullpen ERA of 4.44, which is 21st in MLB. They only have, you know, if you're going to talk about guys that you trust right now, I'd say they have about 1.5 guys they trust, and that's 3 halves. You know, you trust Jansen, not fully, but pretty much. You trust Floro, not fully, but pretty much. And we saw the other day. And you trust Baez, not fully, but pretty much. And that's essentially it. I will add that Julio is probably added to that, but we, you know, we're not entirely sure if he's going to remain on the team. He's on the team right now, but we'll see how that goes forward. But, you know, let me jump on this Craig Kimbrel train, and you know, the big part of it is, oh, we don't know what we're going to get, and he's struggled in the playoffs, and he's had his struggles before. He's not going to fix the bullpen. He's also not necessarily going to hurt the bullpen. I mean, I don't think Craig Kimbrel is going to come in and have a 4.44 ERA, and I don't think he's going to come in and be as bad as, you know, Joe Kelly has shown to be and Scott Alexander has shown to be. So, yeah, I'm going to bad cop this into jumping on the Craig Kimbrel train.
Okay. You know, and I'll preface my good cop by saying I'm not opposed to getting Craig Kimbrel. I'm just not super hopeful that he would solve very many problems. Basically, if you look at the overall season stats, yeah, the bullpen looks pretty bad. But things we know. Kenley Jansen is better than what his stats show. I mean, even if you take out the life of a reliever, Jansen's allowed 9 earned runs. 4 of those were the result of 2 bunts that should have been played probably, and 1 bad pitch to Hunter Renfroe. So in that inning, that's 4. That's almost half of his earned runs. Without those, his ERA is right around 2. So, you know, obviously everything that happened. I'm not saying that Jansen doesn't deserve those runs on his record. I'm saying that there's not a ton of reason to believe that the Jansen who has a 3.8 ERA is the current version of Jansen that we have right now, especially when you look at what he's done lately. Since then, he has 4 straight scoreless outings, even before then. So, I mean, in his last 9 outings, he has shutout inning, 4 run loss to the Padres, shutout inning. So, you know, Kenley is still very good. Joe Kelly, one thing we know about Joe Kelly, he's better than he's been. He may not be great, but he has the stuff to be great, and he is definitely better than he's been so far. Pedro Baez has potential to be really good. Dylan Floro has been really, really good. I mean, until the other night, he had like a 1.3 ERA for the Dodgers over the course of 48 innings last year and this year. Yimi Garcia has been really, really good at times. Scott Alexander, I'm convinced, is hurt. You know, there's Tony Cingrani coming back. Caleb Ferguson has been really good, struggled the other night, but overall has been really good. You know, I'm not opposed to getting Craig Kimbrel, but I would venture to say I believe that from right now until the end of the season, and by the end of the season, I mean the end of October, when the Dodgers raise the World Series trophy, I believe that Kenley Jansen, Pedro Baez, Dylan Floro, at least those 3 will be better than Craig Kimbrel, and possibly another 1 or 2 guys. So, you know, it all depends on, you know, really my main argument against Craig Kimbrel is that people seem to forget that the players have a say in where they sign too. And Craig Kimbrel wants to be a Hall of Fame closer. And the Dodgers, you know, in order to be a Hall of Fame closer, you have to be a closer. The Dodgers, in order to bring Craig Kimbrell in would either have to talk him into being a setup man or demote Kenley Jansen. And I have a hard time seeing either of those things happening.
Yeah. I think we'll have to work a little bit on our bad cop because, you know, maybe we have to take direct quotes from Dodgers Twitter sometime. But different segment for us. You know, we were usually on the same side of things, so it's a little bit different.
We tried to argue.
Yeah, we tried. Maybe there's sometimes we'll get there and maybe we'll try to be a little more contentious. But coming up next, like I said, we got our obscure Dodger of the day. We got a couple on this days that are going to turn into many discussions. But first, we want to remind you again to subscribe to the show on the new Himalaya podcast app or wherever you think we sound best. Subscribe to Locked On Dodgers, Himalaya, with their personally curated playlist and new features every day, is the app to use. So go download at your app store. And after you do that, go to hotels.com, book yourself a nice little trip.
You deserve a break.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe go follow the Dodgers and go watch them somewhere. So we will be right back.
All right, let's take a quick break. For the next minute or two, we're going to talk about SEX. So if you have any KIDS in the CAR, go ahead and plug their EARS for a minute, okay? Hope I spelled all those words right, and I hope you could tell what they meant. Have you ever gone to the barber and wondered why there's a bunch of gray hairs on the ground when they're done cutting your hair? Or have you ever played catch with your son and then you feel like a truck hit you for the next couple days? Or maybe when it comes to the sexy times, are you maybe just maybe a little less always ready to go than you were when you were younger? Don't answer those questions out loud and please do not tweet your answers at us. It's none of our business. In fact, to quote Michael Jackson from back when we were allowed to acknowledge his existence, ain't nobody's business but mine and my baby. That's where BlueChew.com comes in. If you want to increase your performance and get some extra confidence in bed, check out BlueChew. That's blue as in I bleed Dodger blue, and chew as in Madison Bumgarner likes to chew out opponents who pimp homers or flip bats or look at him because he's a crybaby and a stunted immaturity, whatever he is. Ugh. Anyway, Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. But the best part is, Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants a boost in the bedroom, either in quality, quantity, or both. I mean, I obviously don't have any problems in that department. I don't mean to brag, but I do have three whole kids. But I have to admit, even I am a little bit intrigued. So anyway, right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code MLB to try it free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring Locked On Dodgers.
All right, we are back, and my obscure Dodger of the day will be known for those that listen to our old podcast. And he was going to be my first one, but I switched it up last time I hosted. So my obscure Dodger is Juan Samuel. And if you didn't listen to us before on the Scully App podcast, Juan Samuel was a random answer in a lot of Sporkle quizzes around the Dodgers that we had. And he basically became my first guest every time we had a Dodger Sporkle quiz. He only played for the Dodgers 3 years, but he was an all-star one of those years. And it was the year I was born, 1991. So I feel that connection with Juan Samuel. He was an infielder and he played some outfield too. He played with the Phillies, the Mets, Dodgers, Royals, Reds, Tigers, and Blue Jays. They had a long 16-year career. Three of those with the Dodgers, one all-star appearance. Jeff actually saw him play and remembers. So do you have any memory of Juan Samuel?
My strongest memories of Juan Samuel was that he was a rare thing, something you didn't see much. You see it more these days, but back then, he was a leadoff hitter who was very fast and also struck out a ton. His rookie year, he led the major leagues in plate appearances, triples, and strikeouts. He also had 72 stolen bases that year. Imagine having 72 stolen bases and 19 triples as a rookie and not winning Rookie of the Year. That's what happens when you are a rookie the same year as Dwight Gooden. So,
yeah.
But also, he managed to only put up 2.9 WAR despite those numbers, partly because he was really bad at defense and partly because he struck out so much. He didn't really walk at all. He only had a 307 on base percentage. Imagine how many bases he could have stolen if he had ever gotten on base. But yeah, his first four full seasons in the big leagues, he led the National League in strikeouts. In two of those years, he led the majors in triples. So that's what I think of when I think of Juan Samuel, is super fast and strikes out a ton.
There we go. All right. So you found a couple of not super significant, but somewhat significant things that happened on this day. So I will give you the floor for that.
Yeah. The first one, 1973, a 19 inning game. The Dodgers played the Mets 19 innings and, ultimately the Dodgers lost to the Mets 7-3. The Mets scored 4 runs in the top of the 19th. But the interesting thing about that is the two clubs set a National League record by hitting into a combined 9 double plays. And so you wanted to springboard from that into a discussion.
Yeah, so 9 double plays. So I'm sure there was a few different kinds of double plays. But let's pick one, your favorite type of double play.
My favorite type of double play is, I think, the 1-2-3 double play. Bases loaded, because, you know, there's just the change in momentum when you've got bases loaded and 0 or 1 outs. You know, you're threatening, and then the dude hits a comebacker right back to the pitcher. Pitcher throws it to home, and the catcher, something that I like about the catcher having to, you know, it's easier to stretch on first base because you can feel the bag under your foot. Home plate is flat, so you can't feel it. So the catcher takes a little more technique, and then he has to bounce out in front of the plate so he can get a good angle inside the baseline to throw it to the first baseman. Something about the 1-2-3 double play, I think, is probably my favorite.
Yeah, that one was on my list, but we're only picking one. I'm going to go with the runner on third, catching a fly ball and then throwing the runner out at home. You know, it's a fun play in general when somebody gets thrown out at the plate, but even better when it's a double play. Although it does remind me of Michael Young in, what was it, 2013, when he made 4 outs and 2 at-bats after he came in a pinch hit against the Cardinals and now being one of the outs. But yeah, I think that play overall is definitely my favorite double play, you know, catching it and the outfielder making a strong throw and getting the guy out of home.
Yeah, I'll tell you my least favorite kind of double play is when Yasiel Puig is on second base and a guy grounds out, and so there's an out at first, and Puig for some reason decides to try to score from second on a ground out and gets thrown out at home. That's my least favorite.
I thought you were going to say getting two guys tagged out at home.
No, that one that one's not very fun either. Our other on this date is also an extra inning loss to a team that's currently in the American League East. On this date in... Is this the one we were going to do?
I don't...
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you this on this date anyway, but it's not going to springboard. On this date in 1947... noted racist Ben Chapman, the manager of the Phillies, pulled a Craig Council and had his starting pitcher only pitch to the first two batters of the game, the righties, Pee Wee Reese and Jackie Robinson. Then he brought in a lefty to face Gene Hermansky, Dixie Walker, and Pete Reiser. And the Dodgers pinch hit for Hermansky with Carl Furillo, and he had a 3-run homer. So I like that. But the one that's going to springboard us is, on this date in 2000, suspensions were handed down after what had happened a little over a week earlier, which the video went around on Twitter a little bit this past week on the anniversary. If you didn't see it, you should try to track it down. On May 16th, 2000, the Dodgers bullpen ended up fighting in the crowd at Wrigley Field. It was kind of crazy. So on this date in 2016, players and three coaches were suspended. A total of 60 games suspension combined for the 16 players and 24 games for the three coaches. The harshest penalty ever handed down by Major League Baseball. And we want to springboard from there into...
Yeah, that's still crazy to me. I forgot about that, and then the video popped up on Twitter when on the date it happened, and then I remembered, and it was, you know, crazy. I don't remember all the suspensions, but after you read it, it's pretty intense. But going off that, we're going to stick with Dodgers, and we're going to do favorite brawl relating to or involving the Dodgers.
Okay. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
Okay. The one that sticks out in my mind the most is, was it Matt Kemp and Yorvi Torrealba?
Oh, yeah, home plate last year.
Yeah, and something about, you know, when was it? Like 2012-ish?
No, oh, Torrealba.
Yeah, Robinson Chirinos one.
Hey, no. Yeah, back then.
Yeah, and I don't remember... I'll tell you what I remember about it is I was watching the game on my phone while driving my car. I don't know why I was doing that. 2008, June 3rd, 2008, the day after my birthday. I just pulled up the video. So yeah, Kemp strikes, and then Torrealba didn't like that Kemp kind of bumped him. The strikeout was in the dirt, and Kemp kind of bumped Torrealba as Torrealba's going to grab the ball. And they just ended up fighting, and it was hard to tell really what started it, who got angry first, but suddenly it's like a strikeout, and suddenly they're rolling around on the ground fighting. So I love the 0-100 nature of that one.
Yeah, I forgot about that one, but finding the video, that was a good one. I'm gonna go with one that's easy to remember, and probably, you know, at least for Dodger fans of this time right now, the easiest or the most fun one, but the one with the Diamondbacks was just ridiculous. It was an all-out brawl. Like, everybody was fighting. The coaches were fighting. The players were fighting. You had the funny part, you know, going back, looking at it after, and as time went on, was, yeah, J.P. Howe with Turner Ward, who was the Diamondbacks coach at the time, up against the railing, and he's giving it to him, and you know, you had Mark McGwire, Matt Williams, and Don Mattingly. You had everybody going at it. And it I still don't think it's a rivalry with the Diamondbacks, but that kind of, you know, added to maybe their stake of it being a rivalry. And the funniest part about it is a year or two after that, and J.P. Howe was in the outfield before a game, and he was shagging fly balls, and he came by and he signed for some people, and we asked him, oh, no, it was that year. It was probably a week or two after the brawl, and we asked him about it, and he said, yeah, that felt good. He's talking about beating up Turner Ward. So the whole brawl was intense and fun, and, you know, nobody got seriously hurt, so that's also a plus.
Yeah, it was weird to have Kirk Gibson and Mark McGwire opposing each other at Dodger Stadium and to be on McGwire's side.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah. A special honorable mention to Chan Ho Park's karate kick.
Yep. That was a good one. There's been a lot of good ones, you know, and obviously I don't encourage such hijinks, but the Dodgers, their two biggest brawls that year in 2013, both happened in Zach Greinke starts.
Yeah. One broke his collarbone and one didn't.
Yeah. But Ian Kennedy tried to murder Zach Greinke. That, you know, he hit Greinke, would have hit him in the head if Greinke hadn't got his shoulder up. So, yeah.
All right. Good episode. Different episode. Thank you for listening to Locked On Dodgers. We will be back on Monday with, oh, wait, we have a giveaway. You picked the winners, right?
Oh, yeah. So the giveaway this week, well, we're giving away a couple cool cut autographs from a collection of baseball cards called the, I can't remember, Historical Autographs New York Edition or something, focusing on New York of the 50s. These are two members of the 1956 Dodgers, Carl Erskine and Charlie Neal. The Erskine one is really cool. It's like a canceled check from a church donation. Charlie Neal is just his autograph inserted into the card. They're legit autographs. They're graded and authenticated. Pretty cool. So we have two winners. The first winner is from iTunes user Center of the U. And the second winner, let me scroll down and remember, is from iTunes user Dissatisfied with FB. I assume that means Facebook, not fastball. Although maybe it's Clayton Kershaw in disguise and dissatisfied with his fastball. Each of you, please send us a DM with proof that you are that user, and we will get those cards out to you. So again, Dissatisfied with FB and Center of the U. Congratulations.
Yeah. All right. Once again, thank you for listening to Locked On Dodgers. We'll be back on Monday breaking down the Pirates series and anything that goes along with it. Remember, you can subscribe to the show on Himalaya or wherever you think we sound best. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever you use to listen. And if you want to do multiple, you go ahead and do multiple. We're not going to tell anybody. If you like the show, then you have to show us. The things you can do to do that are subscribe and listen and download and rate and review and tell your friends and your family and Dodger fans. And, you know, if you see a guy with the Dodger hat in the street, you go up to him and say, hey, do you listen to Locked On Dodger? And if you don't, I think you should. And then maybe you'll make a friend. While you're at it, go ahead and follow us on Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Also Instagram, same thing, at Locked On Dodgers. You can follow Vince, which is me. at Vince Emperor, you can follow Jeff at Snydog. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do so by calling 323-863-LOCK. 323-863-LOCK. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers and go to hotels.com and book yourself a room. Remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
Talk to you later.
D, I say D-O, D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bonzoo!